for those who are listening, you have to make sure you have a deal. And so she actually ran it, our agent ran this deal by us, and we ran our numbers. We always say, shoot your shot. You know, mm-hmm. the worst they can say is no. So we shot our shot. They accepted our offer, and it's under rehab right now, and it's actually supposed to be listed in a few weeks.
This episode of the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast was brought to you by Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation, by A.R. Morton. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning how to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we've been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up and rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order your copy of Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation.
My name is Andre C. Hatchett, a.k.a. Mr. Own or Be Owned, and I'm encouraging everybody listening to this podcast to pick up my new book, Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America, on Amazon.com. If you're a black man, if you need guidance, inspiration, a path to follow, to build wealth in this country, pick it up. Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America.
Welcome to the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast with your host, Charles Oglesby III, a.k.a. Tide Millionaire.
This is the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Tide Millionaire. This is episode number 57. I'm the founder and the director of the Tide Capital Investment Club. We have over 199 members. We're crossing over 200 as we speak, doing great things with everything we're doing. You guys already know the purpose of this show is to share the stories of successful African-American entrepreneurs and business owners, because I believe, and hopefully you believe, that business and investing are the true keys to financial success and generational wealth. Today, we have somebody who, actually a team of people, a husband and wife team, which is awesome, and they go by the name of Pedway Estates. You guys probably all know them from Instagram and social media. They're doing some great things. I'm not sure exactly which market they're in, but they're doing some great things in the flip and rehab business model. Some good people that we're going to learn from. I just want to welcome them to the show. So with that, welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah. Excited to be here.
Cool. So yeah. I'm excited because this is the first time I've had two people on the show at the same time. So can you kind of tell us more about you guys and who you are?
You want to go first? I'll go first.
Ladies first.
So I'm Courtney. My husband's Derek, obviously, as we said earlier. And we are just a team who started our real estate journey last year, actually. We were looking to build our own course and establish generational wealth. We don't have kids yet, but we are looking to eventually start a family. We wanted to look at options outside of a 9-to-5, help others and teach others how to be their own boss and to how to run a successful business. Darius was actually in real estate before I was. I heard too many negative stories regarding real estate from other peers, so I didn't really pay it attention. And we went to a local real estate workshop one day here in Louisville, Kentucky, which is where we do our project. And we were on board and been hitting the ground running ever since. So that's my story. What's your version?
I basically started it in order to give our family more flexibility and freedom. I've been in seminary for a while, and working in healthcare, it does pay well, but you're away from home a lot of the time. And so I've been in prayer for a while in regards to streams of income that would allow me to be able to raise my family, to be present husband and a present father figure. And so after much prayer, an educational advertisement on Instagram, ironically, as I'm scrolling pointlessly, from that education, all fun and games since then.
You've been in real estate since before her, so how did your real estate story start?
I would go by random houses, and I literally would look through windows at whether it's a vacant home or homes for sale. I would know that there's a lot of money to be made, but specifically how to go about doing that. How do you garner enough funds in order to be able to do this? And at the same time, be able to, you know, pay back lenders and make a good chunk of change for yourself. So I've always had the interest. We just really last year started putting our foot forward in regards to putting a concept to application.
Yeah, he had an interest way before, but we start actually doing anything with that interest and with those ideas until last year. But I was totally against the idea, but really it comes down, like you said, education and being prepared and equipped. You know, anytime you're trying to build wealth, there is a level of risk. Yeah. You know, no risk, no reward. That's what they say. But we wanted to, you know, basically take on the risk. And so we educated ourselves. We network, we go to meetings, and we try to learn from everyone we can to build a successful real estate business. Yeah.
So I kind of want to talk about those negative things you heard, because there might be somebody who probably heard those things too. What are some things that you were told that made you stay out of the real estate market?
Oh, man. As far as especially a rental, you know, don't get into rentals because, you know, there's bad tenants. You know, they don't pay their rent time. Or, you know, if you're doing flips, you know, don't do flips because you can't. There's no good contractors out there, or just so many stories of people losing money, not being educated. So they jump into real estate and they do end up losing, not because real estate doesn't work, but because they didn't take the necessary steps, educate themselves and learn from people who are where they want to be to do it properly. And so, yeah, I just heard stories on top of stories. And so we took that negativity and we flipped it, no pun intended, right? to figure out how to avoid what our peers were going through. Bunch of negative stories of how it didn't work. And it's not that it doesn't work. It works when you work it.
I think that entire idea is so true, mm-hmm. not just in regards to real estate. It can be in mm-hmm. business. It can be in certain careers. It can be in wealth building in general. People can always have these negative things, but it's not the vehicle. It's maybe it's your lack of knowledge or your lack of experience, or your lack of willingness to push through what's difficult. So one thing that I think that's awesome is you guys said you've been doing it for a year, but everybody who looks at what you guys are doing with your posters and your binders, it looks like you guys have been doing it for like 10 years. I thought you guys are like seasoned pros. So
it's funny because we've honestly had a lot of people reach out to us for mentoring and things of that nature, and how to, and as much as we would love, you know, to teach through, you know, a private message or a DM, it's impossible to teach everything there is to know about real estate in a private message or in a few characters. And while we definitely have plans to offer those programs in the future, because we just started last year, you know, we don't want to misinform. And so there's a lot of things we learn too as well. And so we want to make sure that we have our ducks in a row before we start teaching others. There was a joke how, you know, you have a person who loses weight and then the next day they're a fitness coach. So you want, I feel like you should have a level of experience and knowledge before you start teaching others. Because when we do things, we want to make sure we do them right. So, but definitely coming, just not now.
So can you guys walk me through that this last year? What did your first real estate deal look like?
Our first real estate deal looked like putting a concept to application. Mm-hmm. One of the first things that we learned to do was
find funding.
Find funding. But before you even find funding, you have to have a deal, right?
Right. So oh, yeah, true.
We had to find a chart mm-hmm. or a real estate agent who thought like an investor. So we actually, we were really fortunate while we were sifting through agents after agents, calling agents, not getting answers or call back. Mm-hmm. We happened upon an agent who was also an investor. Mm-hmm. And this agent, basically, she came across a great opportunity in regards to a property. We learned not to make emotional decisions, right? So when we walked through this property, it was probably our fourth or fifth walkthrough, but after we ran our numbers and the margins worked out, we basically, again, following simple steps, we shot our shot. It was below asking price what we offered for it. The seller took our offer.
What's crazy? It was a listed property. You'll hear a lot of investors that say, you know, don't do with properties on the MLS. And we deal with all types of properties. We deal with off-market properties. and listed properties. It just so happened that our first property was a listed property, but the same way that we analyze deals that are off market are the same way we analyze deals that are on the market. Is it a deal? What are the repairs? What are they asking? What can we make? We run our numbers. We have a spreadsheet. We have like a deal analyzer spreadsheet. We plug in our numbers. You know, if it goes below a certain ROI, we don't even look at it. So whether it's on the market or it's not, we see if it's a deal. And so the very first thing is, for those who are listening, you have to make sure you have a deal. And so she actually ran it, our agent ran this deal by us, and we ran our numbers. We always say, shoot your shot. You know, the worst they can say is no. So we shot our shot. They accepted our offer, and it's under rehab right now, and it's actually supposed to be listed in a few weeks. Nice. So that's kind of how our first deal went. And really, it's just we've learned the power of negotiating, and we are great at math because numbers don't lie.
Yeah, it's really good to stick to numbers because you can see a home or opportunity, or you can even be finagled by somebody who's very persuasive, right?
Right.
And so my greatest strength is I call it playing dumb, right? So, you know, I can hear a lot of cool things about a property, a lot of bad things about a property, but it's going
to
ultimately come down to my numbers.
Once
I, you know, take a few minutes and run my numbers or hours. So once I run my numbers, I know my margins. I know whether it's tight or loose, and I know how far up I can go.
Right.
So it's really important for investors or for aspiring real estate investors to stick to your numbers. Mm-hmm. It's very sad for us to come across properties. An investor had this property. They ran out of money, and basically they're just trying to break even.
Right.
That's a place that you never want to be in as an investor, because you always want to be in a position to make money and not lose money. And so that's one of the ways that you can make sure that you're a savvy investor.
What did the numbers look like on that property in particular? What were they asking? How did you guys kind of back into your offer, and how did all that stuff work out?
So we kind of have a strategy. I'm trying to work off of memory because we don't have our computer, but this person was asking, and again, this was a listed property, so it just shows that you can steal good deals off the MLS. So this property, they were asking 120. We got it under contract, I think, for 110 or something like that. The repairs were 65. But the resale value was anywhere from 245 to 250. So we got it under contract, and in our contract, we always have minimum 7 to 10 day inspection period. So once we get it under contract, we use those 7 to 10 days to actually have professionals look at it to see, okay, what needs to be done to the house? How much will it cost, just to confirm, you know, how much are we repaired? So when we did that, we did a counter offer. So although we got it under contract for 110, we got it all the way down to 100. So you're talking about a $100,000 house with 65 in repairs that can resell for anywhere from 245 to 250. So I'll let other people plug in the numbers and they can see the return. So even after, you know, the holding cost, and even after the agent's commission fees, you're still looking at a minimum 35 return on your investment. And this is the kicker, we didn't use any of our own money.
And that's where I was going next.
That's where I was going. People's money.
Yeah. When you have a deal like that, it probably becomes very easy to find money, right?
Right. That's the kicker. You have to have a deal. Because when you have a deal, you'll get the money.
It's like they say, there's no shortage of money looking to find good deals.
And then you have to paint it to where it works out for us. So not only are people funding our deal, they're getting paid as well because they know it's a deal. So we use other people's money and it works out for all parties.
So when you guys financed this, did you guys go hard money? Did you go private money?
So on our properties, we use a combination of private or hard, just depending on what's available at the moment. Our first property was all private money. Our next property was a combination of hard and private. Actually, all of the ones following the first was a combination of hard and private. But we're still open to using private. It really just depends on, you know, what money is available. We do a lot of networking, and we run across people who have, you know, retirement accounts that are not making much money. They're just sitting there in their account, maybe making 3 to 4%. And so they're looking for ways for their money to grow. So they're entrusting us with their funds to get these deals to not only make them money, but it's also making us money. More that goes into it than what you're probably hearing over the podcast, but just to show there's money out there and you don't have to go through a traditional bank. You know, we've never had to go through a traditional bank. It's just being diligent, going out there, networking, and just finding the money because it's out there.
So you mentioned private money and hard money, and there might be people who don't know the difference between the two.
When it comes to private money, it's usually an individual. Or it can be individuals who group together to combine their funds. But the difference, private money has a negotiated compounded interest rate, right? So with the private money lender, let's say I'll pay you 10% annualized interest, and he or she comes back and say, no, I want 12% annualized interest with a point. Or 2 points at the end. We might compromise. Let's say I can do 11% with 1 point, and then we shake hands and there's your deal.
Or no point. Our private lender, it's just interest.
Yes, our first home was actually just simply interest at the end, right?
Yeah, at the end.
At the point of sale. I call it like no hands. We're not paying anything monthly. It's just at the end, at the point of sale, we have to pay them 12% interest
for whatever we negotiate.
Yes. Hard money, you always have set fees. So a hard money company may always be 12%, 2 points. Or it's always set and you also have, it's more complicated in the sense you can have a lot of red tape in the sense of they may, in order to pull draws, they may have to send someone to inspect or things of that nature, but it's always set. You know that for every home is going to be an automatic 2 points and 12%. Courtney, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, hard money for the most part, if you put it in simple terms, usually those are your organizations. We've had a few people who reached out to us on social media asking, you know, for a list of hard money lenders that, you know, they could use for their renovation project. So most of the time, they're organizations, whereas private lenders can just, it can be anyone. It can be a person. It could be someone's mom. It can be an uncle or a friend or a coworker. So that's the best way we can differentiate between private lenders and your hard money lenders. And hard money lenders are typically more expensive. You have a lot more fees with hard money lenders, whereas private money lenders, you are just probably paying some type of interest rate, whatever you negotiate on. So that's pretty much the difference. Private money lenders can almost be anyone. So.
Yeah. I think the cool thing is, and what you guys kind of alluded to is like, when you find the deal, you kind of can do whatever the heck you want to do.
Right.
So it's like, find the deal and then you can be choosy on how you want to finance your deal. And so what are some tips you have for people who are looking to find deals?
Definitely build relationships with people who know the area. I think the kicker is that we're not even from Louisville. We actually were in Alabama prior. We went to college. We went to Auburn War Eagle.
No, Roll Tide. I went to Auburn
War Eagle. But he moved to Louisville. We got married, and I moved up here too. So we've only been in Louisville 2 to 3 years. So obviously, we don't know the market as well as people who have been here for years. So I would say, one, you know, link up with someone who really knows the market. Two, get around people who can teach you how to look for good deals. Because again, we say never make an emotional decision. You know, what are the numbers? And finding funding, networking. We have a local REIA group, Real Estate Investment Association, every month. You know, look up groups on meetup.com. You know, get connected in some Facebook groups. Network, network, network. You know, a lot of people who have funded our projects have come through networking.
Yeah.
And also, a great key that will save you time is to really find a great real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find a real estate agent who knows the market and thinks from an investor standpoint, that will save you a lot of time because she, you know, he or she can be, you know, pouring through the MLS, as listings come. If they have an investor's mindset, they won't waste your time. What we found and continue to find that there are a lot of real estate agents
who don't have an investor's mindset.
They'll send you properties, you know, brand new houses that are already at their listed at their peak value.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't do this with that. Yeah. So you're wasting my time and yours.
So our realtor actually does investment. So
yes.
So she knows the market in and out. She knows the numbers. She's a shark. So if anything, get a good realtor on your team as well. That will. She's basically almost like our acquisition specialist.
Nice.
She's the one shooting us deals, saying, "Hey, I have this hot property. You know, you want to look at it." And again, you have your off-market properties that come through Bandit Signs, Craigslist ads, and Facebook ads. But as far as ads on the MLS that are still good deals, you know, she's sending those to us because we built a relationship to where she knows, one, we're going to close on deals.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we know what we're doing. And three, we're going to be professional and we're going to follow through.
Yeah.
And so when you have someone like that on your team, it saves so much time, money, and energy.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like a secret weapon.
It's funny because I always kind of hesitate to work with real estate agents. Just because I feel like you do get that. You get somebody who's looking for a retail buyer. You get somebody who's going to send you properties where the seller will be offended if you gave them a lowball offer. And so it's interesting. I've kind of just avoided using real estate agents altogether, but it seems like you guys stand by them. So it's pretty interesting.
I remember I chuckled at a text maybe a month ago from my agent, and she had gotten used to our offers, right? She was like, "You can't lowball them." Until we start getting house after house where, you know, these people are asking astronomically high prices, but they're actually very reasonable. You just have to shoot your shot. And so I find that, again, we don't make emotional decisions. So from our math, we have a specific number that we know we have to hit. We know that you make your money when you buy, not when you sell. So based upon just a consistent mindset, if you go to a realtor, although they might initially be shaky, after they see your diligence and your due diligence at that, after they see you continue to close on home after home after home, you're going to persuade them over.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I can show you the text where I was offended, but I did chuckle where she like, I'm not lowballing these guys. I'm buying this house at a price that I know I can renovate and resell it again at. So it's important. Don't, you know, have your tail between your legs. Don't be scared. And initially we were, but have the courage to, you know, if future shot, if that investor tells you, "Hey, you know, I don't want to do this. They're going to be offended." Guess what? It's time for you to find your new agent. You know, we've had that before where, you know, an agent felt like he wasn't comfortable listing at a certain amount, and that's why we have the agent that we have now, because she'll list, and she's seen our consistency, she's seen our diligence, and she's seen that it most of all works. So yeah, shoot your shot and be consistent, and stick with your math, stick with your numbers.
Yes, if anyone listening can hear what we're saying, if they don't take away anything else, take away shoot your shot. We've had so many people, these other investors that say, "Well, we don't want to offend. We don't want to lowball them." No, we're offering what the house is worth. we're not lowballing. We're offering what it's worth. And we're offering according to our numbers. And if they say no, guess what? They say no. And if they say no, what are we going to do? Follow up. We're going to follow up until it closes. And thankfully, our agent that we have on our team now understands that. And so it's a no-brainer. When we say, "Hey, offer this," she offers this. No questions asked, because like Darius was saying, when she sees, okay, man, they're closing. They're really getting this ball rolling. Let me stay on this train because I don't want them to kick me off. So it's like, you know, you better get on the train, because we're gonna keep going whether you want to stay on the train or not.
Nice.
And so yeah, it's just shoot your shot. All the listeners, shoot your shot.
Shoot your shot.
Don't try to look a certain way. You know, you be bold, you act your wage. not at your age, at your wage, you know, you go with your numbers, and you have a clear conscience after that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys determine how much it's going to cost to rehab a property?
During our walkthrough, we at first we were kind of novices, but home after home, you kind of get good at it, right? So, of course, a house is pretty simple. You have a roof, you have mechanicals, and then you have cosmetics. So, first thing we do when we get to a home is we walk around the outside. We look at whether there's any foundational issues, any roof issues. Then we walk inside. We check, you know, make sure all the framing is at what condition the framing is at. We check mechanicals,
foundation.
We check all of that, and from that, we go with national average prices to fix these things if they are in disrepair, and then from there we put in an offer. We've gotten so good now as to where we bring our general contractor with us.
Nice.
And so we will have him. We already, of course, we do our due diligence, but we also have him walk through, and he gives us a number. And then we'll do some type of negotiation. Let's say we're at a home and we see, $50,000 worth of damage, and he sees, $60,000. So we've been in situations where, we'll come to a conclusion of 55, or we may even go up to 60, depending on whether we feel like we can manage, that blow. Because sometimes you have tight margins, and sometimes you have margins that are loose.
It goes back to your numbers.
Yeah. And so even this house today, we estimated the repairs to be higher, but we never tell him that. We always ask him. And so we learn how to play his game. So basically we estimated the repairs to be, I think, 51,000 and some change. And we asked him and he said 40. So of course we're going to act like, can you go any lower or whatever. But once he told us 40, we already knew, like, this is cash money.
So just to kind of walk through the process, so when there's a deal that we're potentially interested in, we set up a showing to walk through. At that initial walkthrough, we're looking to get a ballpark estimate. Okay, how much do you think, just based on what you see, the repairs will cost? So like, for example, the home we walked through today, we estimated just ballpark, okay, this might cost us 40. So we run our numbers based on a ballpark estimate. And also when we went to our local real estate class, they teach you how to properly estimate. So we just didn't come up with these numbers, out of our head. We were trained how to do this. So this goes back to education and learning from people who are where you want to be. So they trained us how to be able to ballpark repairs. So we make our offer based on what we believe the repairs will cost. If our offer is accepted and we get it under contract, we have that inspection contingency that we talked about. Was our repair estimate accurate when we walked through initially? And if it is, we go back and say, well, we use his bid to determine, okay, if we're going to counter offer, or is it okay to continue with the offer at the actual price that they asked for? Hopefully that makes sense. So we do an initial ballpark repair estimate, but then we get an actual repair bid from our contractor when we walk through that property for a second time during our inspection period.
So what? It makes perfect sense. You guys said you went to a class to learn how to do all of this.
Yes.
Yes. Education.
How long was that class? It was an in-person class?
Yes, it was an in-person workshop, 3 days. And so from 3 days, from 9 to 5, they are teaching you how to do repairs. They're teaching you how to analyze deals. They're teaching you the basics of real estate.
This is Ken Morris, the CEO and founder of Multibex, the private equity investment firm, and the creator of the brand Lord of My Land, the Alpha Gentleman Entrepreneur, and I am a proud supporter of Tide Capital. You can find me on Instagram at Lord of My Land and at The Lord Ken.
This is Charles Oglesby, also known as Tide Millionaire, host of the Millionaire Podcast, and I'm the founder and the director of the Tide Capital Investment Club that now has over 200 members.
Todd Acquisitions, which is our crowdfunded real estate firm, and Todd Ventures, our crowdfunded venture capital firm. I am formally inviting you to join one of our many investment clubs. If you are someone who is new to investing, a seasoned investor, or someone who doesn't even know what investing is, we know that you will learn the key to investing and how to build generational wealth through the use of crowdfunding by working with our team. Email info@capitaltodd.com to join today.
How long did it, after you guys took that class, how long did you wait until you did your first deal?
Oh man, it was only like 2 months. Well, because what we did is we wanted to make sure we were, you know, doing things in order. So we wanted to make sure our business entity was actually set up first.
Yeah, we set up the LLC first.
So we took the course somewhere around there. And then we set up our LLC because we wanted to make sure we didn't do anything until we were protected. Because, of course, we didn't want to put our personal names or anything. So we got our LLC started and then we hit the ground running. And so we got our first deal in December. So we said we're really still new at this. And so we just hope our story, our journey inspires people to stop sitting on their hands. Mm-hmm. We had no real estate experience prior. Like we are new. And so if we can do it, anyone can do it. We simply took the tools and the systems that were provided to us, followed them, you know, had faith and actually put, you know, what's that song? Walk it like you talk it. We just want to talk about what we're doing, but we also wanted to put feet behind it. And so we took what we learned. We said, you know, we're not going to just keep sitting on this information and we're going to do something with it. And so we knew there's still potential. You're going to make mistakes. You're not going to know everything. But at some point you have to stop sitting on all the knowledge you've been given and do something with it. And so we decided to do that. And several properties later, here we are still going. So anyone listening, you know, if we can do it, you can do it. You don't have to be an expert to get started in the real estate. You just have to have the willingness to get started.
What are you guys' goals going forward? What's the future look like for you?
It looks like continuing to flip. And the Golden Goose is a rental property.
Rentals,
that's residual. That becomes residual income. So rental cash flow properties are where we want to be. Because you no longer have to flip if you have, you know, 15 to 20 units with, you know, at least $850 of cash flow coming in, positive cash flow at that. So that's the Golden Goose. That's where we want to be.
And we would still flip. We would never stop flipping, I don't think, because there's nothing wrong with getting those large checks every now and then. But definitely you want to get to the point where
you don't have to flip.
Mm. And really, we don't have to flip now. We just have personal goals that we're trying to reach. But we also enjoy it too. So it's not like work for us. Mm. You know, we enjoy seeing older homes and making them livable and beautiful again. So the multi-units in the future, in the near future.
I think that there's a lot of advantages when you have a husband and wife on the same page, working towards the same goals. Can you kind of share the advantages that come with that? Because I think that it's a huge advantage that I think we overlook in a lot of times.
Hey, I know in our postmodern age, it's weird for people to actually be happily married. People don't realize the advantages of complementarianism. People, like, you can be weak in the area and another person can be strong. And you can be bold about your weakness. You have to be ashamed of your weakness. You know, Courtney is administrative minded. She's very sharp. She has an attention to detail. As to where I am vision oriented. When I look at a house, I can, you know, tell the design from just looking at the house. I can tell, you know, whether we need to move this kitchen here, whether we need to expand this room there. You know, Courtney may not really have foresight or vision that I have. But when you bring those talents together, when you bring those gifts together, they complement each other beautifully. And so I guess that's the soul of being a husband and wife team. I think LeVar Ball said it best. He said, stay in your lane. I stay in my lane.
And I stay in mine. Yeah. And it works out beautifully because again, like he is big picture detail. Like he sees where he wants to go, and then I'm the one saying, okay, this is how we're gonna get there. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So it worked out great, actually. And because we do get some people saying, you know, well, I'm on board, but my husband isn't, or a husband coming to us saying, well, I'm on board and my wife isn't.
You also have to have patience, you know. Both everybody is growing, right? Mm-hmm. So don't become self-righteous in the sense, let's say I mess up and Courtney wants to beat me over the head with it, or vice versa. It's in a relationship, there's a give and take.
Which I have before, I apologize.
Yeah, I've done the same thing with her. Yeah, we've lost a deal or two because somebody has, you know, not dotted their I's or crossed their T's. You have to learn to forgive and move forward. Don't forgive and forget, because you want to remember so you don't do the same thing again. But, yeah, you forgive that person. You know, Christ continues to forgive us, so we forgive one another. So that's very important.
We're both growing personally, relationally, and in business. And so there is going to be a moment of tension, because you're also two different people trying to come together. And so I have a totally different way I would do things, and he has a totally different way he would do things. But you have to learn how to come together and work out those differences and compromise for a common goal. So I won't say there won't be moments of tension. I won't say that there won't be moments where you might disagree. Well, I want to do this and you want to do this. But you still have to learn how to come together and just make it work. And so, but again, that starts in the foundation of the relationship, because if that's not already ingrained in your relationship, it's going to trickle into your business and cause chaos.
So what are some mistakes that you guys made while you were running your business?
We had a great home that we were pretty much the first two, and the margins were absolutely wonderful. But we did not pay attention when we sent in our proof of funds letter. What a proof of funds letter is, for those who don't know, it's simply whenever you put an offering on a home, you have to show the seller that you have the funds to buy the home. So that's all a proof of funds letter is. Mm-hmm. It's simply you showing that you have the funds available to purchase the home. Mm-hmm. Anyways, on our proof of funds letter, we had
the wrong contact number.
So when the seller attempted to contact the number we had on our proof of funds letter, so because they didn't get the answer, they went with the next buyer.
Mm.
Now that's a heart.
Because it was a good return.
Yeah, that was at least $50,000 that would have been in our pockets in about 4 months.
Because we failed to pay attention to detail.
I wanted to know if you guys moved to the market that you're in now for the purpose of investing, or was just something that happened?
Something that happened. When we were, you know, he was thinking about real estate was not on my radar at all. So, and it just so happened that he was scrolling, ran across his workshop. We went to the workshop. And what's so funny, he forgot to mention this. When we went to the workshop, he initially didn't want to do it anymore. So it's like it flipped. So initially I didn't want to do it, and he did. We went to the workshop, he didn't want to do it, and then I did. Because I guess he felt it was just so much.
Nah, it's expensive.
Well, yes, that too, because it's a lot of real estate. You can risk a lot of money in real estate. And so you start having those second thoughts. But, you know, we left the workshop and thought it over, and, you know, we hit the ground running eventually. So here we are now.
What are some tips you would give to somebody who's looking to get started?
Start.
I always say, don't suffer from analysis paralysis. I'm not going to say just jump out there without getting educated. I tell people there are so many seminars and things out there. You know, if you're on social media, I'm pretty sure you've heard of, you know, the Real Estate Summit out there. I feel like that's a great resource for people to get started if they want to learn how to do real estate. Like you said, look up Google local real estate investment groups in your area. Research, but don't research to the point where you have analysis paralysis and don't do anything.
Take 1 week, Google everything you can about wholesaling. take the next week and network as much as possible. Get in contact with investors. The next week, start applying what you learn. Real estate, it's like so easy a caveman can do it. It's like once you know like how easy, most people when they see like a home listed for $250,000, they don't know that they can get that house under contract for $1,000. Now, you may not have $250,000, but if you have $1,000 on your credit, like, you know, on your credit card, that they're the $250 home that you can potentially wholesale. There's a $100,000 home that you can wholesale. It's always a lot of opportunity. So I guess Courtney doesn't like me because I'm always like, this, you know, just start, do something.
But start educated. So, and so it goes back to the reason why I was also kind of nervous about starting, because again, you can get intimidated by the numbers. Like, I would have never thought to even look at some of the homes we've looked at because we didn't know any better back then. But now, because we've been educated, we've been trying to learn. And when we say educated, we're not trying to sound like we know it all, because we don't. We still have a lot to learn. What did Kendrick say? Sit down and be humble.
Yeah.
We're humble, realize we don't know it all. And we're always looking for ways to learn, always looking for ways to improve. But definitely get around people who know more than you and who are where you want to be. But don't be so nervous like I was where you don't start. Because honestly, if it wasn't for my husband, I probably still wouldn't be in real estate, because I was so almost paranoid to the point where I just didn't do anything, or I was so influenced by the negativity, but not allowing the positivity from real estate that I did learn to motivate me to start sooner. But yeah, if anyone's getting started, there's definitely a ton of resources out there that will be willing to help you get started, especially wholesaling. You don't have to have any money down or credit or anything like that, and you can use that to start building up your capital.
I think that starting is the most important thing. That's like my number one advice I tell anybody about anything. Just because you're gonna learn so much just by doing. So it's like you learn through that first deal something that maybe even if you read 100 books, you still wouldn't catch what you caught on that first deal. So it's like you can sit on the sidelines, and if you never get started, you're never gonna really know what it really takes.
Right. So. And I know it's fear, it's money, which is why we even harp on wholesaling, especially for new timers, because again, you don't have to have cash. You don't have to have any credit. It's literally just about, if you know how to find, then you know how to do real estate. You know how to put a deal under contract. You can easily make a few thousand to help you build your journey to maybe accumulate enough capital to start flipping, and then accumulate enough capital from flipping to maybe buy your first rental or multifamily property. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we always try to advise people to hang out with people who are where you want to be and learn from them and glean, and don't just sit on it, but do something with it.
Nice. Who is somebody that you look up to and why?
That's a good question. I'll let you go first.
Well, people, I don't know. Nobody in specific. I would say a Sean Combs.
Yeah, I
just want to delineate that. The only reason I look up to him is because of business. That's it.
He's flashy, but he knows how to do business. I would definitely say, you know, marriage issues aside, Beyonce and Jay-Z. I've always admired Beyonce's work ethic. That girl, say what you want, but she works hard. Jay-Z, you know, I respect him for that most recent album. Basically, you know, teaching minorities the importance of, you know, not spending all your tech and investing in establishing generational wealth. I know it's not new information. That information has been out there. But for him to even take that step to say, hey, you know, Black people, let's make our dollars count. So as far as business and just giving back to the community by sharing knowledge also, I respect that. definitely a business rise and work ethic.
And I'm sorry, not sure. Warren Buffett.
You can't sleep on Warren.
Warren.
I like his life. You can't sleep on Warren. The fact that he still lives in his house that he had from the 1950s just even speaks volumes, because, you know, we're not trying to be a couple that is, you know, flashy. Although we like nice things, yeah, we proudly
can be bougie.
I can be bougie sometimes, but we still proudly, you know, drive our 2001 Honda Civic, 2004 Toyota Camry, because we have a long term goal in mind. You know, trying to figure out, you know, live like no one else so you can live like no one else later. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us don't understand the concept of short-term sacrifice for long-term reward or delayed gratification. We want to ball out now. Mm-hmm. You know, Gucci and Louis, they're doing fine. they're not worried right now. And so we don't know how to have delayed gratification. And so that's why I respect those people. I respect even just people in my family, like my aunt, her work ethic, you know, she's the one who taught me about delayed gratification, you know, sacrifice now so you can live a certain way later, you know. So those are some of the people I guess we look up to right now.
I like it. A lot of very valuable content just in that short 2-minute clip. I like it. That's something I'm really big on, is just like living below your means, like make a bunch of money and just be frugal. And then you take that big money, turn it into rental property, and then you live out the rental property as opposed to living out of the actual principal.
Exactly. And that's where we are. We try to live very frugally. I mean, we still enjoy ourselves. We definitely like to travel. That's something we kind of do splurge on. But for the most part, you know, we live modestly because we don't have anything to prove. You know, we're trying to build generational wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not building generational wealth with putting all of our money in the Louis Vuitton and Gucci and expensive cars, and depreciating assets. You know, you're not doing that.
Nope.
So what's one way to do that? Real estate. One way to do that? Budget your money. What's one way to do that? Invest. Mm-hmm. Not just putting it all on our back.
What is your favorite business book?
The Bible. I know that sounds heavily religious, but being a man of faith, I'm warned that good stewardship is found throughout Scripture. Whether you start off with Abraham and being a wealthy man, you fast forward to the New Testament, Christ admonishing all believers to count the cost. You also see, beginning in Acts, you see the New Testament church, you see a lot of the erudite. You had house churches being held in the houses of big houses. And so back then, the only way you had a big house is if you had money. And so you see the way both women and men in Scripture, you see how they were good stewards of their resources. And you also see bad examples. Of course, we want to take notes from the good examples. You see how you see the benefits of being a good steward versus a bad steward. So I would say the Bible. She would probably say something.
In addition to the Bible, because it is layered with just stewardship principles, but as far as a business, I would definitely say Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think that's like a staple, teaching you basic business concepts, stewardship, importance of making your money make money. It's those concepts are woven all throughout that book, I believe. So that's my personal favorite.
Very cool. So two last questions. What is your best real estate investment advice?
I can't harp on this enough. Stick to your numbers. Do not make emotional purchases. I can't stress that enough. We see investors all the time. Again, we run across unfinished homes, people losing money, people losing lots of money. And because you're in real estate, you're not sometimes talking about a couple of $100s. One wrong move or one bad deal can cost you thousands. So it's important to know how to analyze deals. get accurate. If you're flipping, get, and even if you're wholesaling, there was a joke where I think there was a meme on Facebook or something where, you know, it was this gutted house that was in poor condition. And it said, like, wholesalers be like $5,000. this stuff like this stuff like that. Like, you want to also build rapport with your end buyers. Because if I'm wholesaling and I'm saying, okay, repairs are about $20,000, but it's a $60,000 job, that shows me you don't even really know how to analyze deals. So it's important to know how to analyze deals, whether you're wholesaling, flipping, or doing rentals. Because not only does it make you look professional, but it also builds rapport to your end buyers and people you are working with. And it prevents you from losing money and losing out on deals. And it also attracts money to you because, again, if you have a deal, and let's say you are wholesaling it, you'll find a buyer. Mm-hmm. Or if you're flipping it, you'll find a lender. So it's really going back to analyzing deals and running your numbers. How much do I need to purchase this at? Well, how much will this make me? What is the resale value? How much will it cost? So what do I need to buy it for? We tell people to work backwards. Don't buy it, then figure out how much it will cost, and then figure out what I can sell it for. Find out what you can sell it for, find how much it takes to fix it up, then figure out what you need to offer on it. That's how you work. And so many people work the opposite way and they end up losing money or unfinished projects.
What does wealth mean to you?
Scripture says a good man leaves a fortune for his children's children. So wealth looks like to me, my son having the option to either maybe go to college or travel the world or and not necessarily have to either. I don't want him to have to feel like he has to go to college or go immediately start working. I want him to know that he has, you know, a family business that generates plenty of wealth for him that he can be a part of. And I also want, you know, my son's son to have money that they didn't have to work for. I call it a healthy jealousy for, you know, some of my friends who, you know, in college, I went to college on a full valedictorian scholarship, although I didn't maintain that. Don't tell anyone that. But I always admired my friends who told me that they had a grandparent or who had, you know, some type of stipend for them, some type of pension stored away that they didn't know about. They had $80,000 that, you know, when they turned 18, they could use any type of way they wanted, and they decided to use that for school. I want to have that for, of course, my son and his children, or my daughter and her children. So, yes.
So just leaving an inheritance for our children's children. We're Christians, and so our faith fuels everything we do. But wealth, in addition to leaving an inheritance for our children, is just the ability to also give back to other people financially. You know, we dream of a day where maybe we can bless someone with a house because we're in the financial position to do so. Giving back. I feel like if you're in real estate just for the money to spend it all on yourself or to be selfish with it, yeah, then you're in it for the wrong reasons. And so it's definitely important to give back. I don't know if everyone saw that video Drake came out with God's plan. But I don't know about anyone else, but that inspired me even more. You know, that he was in the position to even do that and to mm-hmm. give back. And he has the right idea. And honestly, that inspired us even more so. Like, this is what it's about, giving back to the community. And so while obviously real estate can be a very profitable business, it's no secret, what are we doing with the money that we're gaining? Are we putting it back into the community? Are we serving other people? Or is it just for us to be flashy and spend it on cars, clothes, and stunt on the gram? So that's what wealth is for us, is not only leaving an inheritance for our children's children, but also being able to give back to those who can't give you anything in return.
I feel like some of the best questions and answers we had were like the more idealistic questions. Mm-hmm. I like those.
Yeah.
I wish I had more. I can't even think of any more. But that was a great interview, guys. I'm inspired. I'm over here motivated, like, yeah. So you guys are awesome. You guys are a great couple. I appreciate you for coming on the show. Where can people find out more about you?
Petway Estate. PetwayEstates.com. If you Google Petway Estates, our goal is to take over the first page of Google. So PetwayEstates.com. We're Petway Estates on Facebook. Petway Estates on Instagram. We don't have a Twitter. I tried Snapchat. We're too old for Snapchat now. But yeah, Instagram, Facebook, we love connecting with people. We are working on some things, but honestly, we want to, you know, develop our business more, because when we start offering programs and opportunities for other people, we definitely want it to be A1. So, but definitely follow us on those social media outlets and on our website. Join our email list. Hey, if you are trying to sell a house, let us know. Shameless plug. But yeah, so you can connect with us in any of those ways.
I did have one last question. Somebody wanted me to ask you a question. They said, ask Petway Estates how you guys came up with the idea of that binder.
Oh, that was your idea, Darius, yeah. Actually.
well, just holding people accountable.
Yeah.
What happens is during, after you've bought the house and everything like that, you want to hold your general contractor accountable. So if you have that, you want crown moldings in the ceiling, mm-hmm. and you know, you get, you know, three fourths of the way through the project and you still don't see any crown molding, you ask him, yo,
what's in that binder?
turn to page 3, section C. Mm-hmm. You will see in the binder Where you signed that we would have crown molding. Mm-hmm. And so that just, that keeps everybody accountable. Mm-hmm. It keeps us accountable. So when we, on one property, we actually wanted to move out a wall that wasn't in the binder. Mm-hmm. And so, you know what? That wall didn't get moved out like we asked, but you know what? We couldn't complain. Why? Because it wasn't in the binder.
So if you do, you make an adjustment, you know, we'll do like change order where parties sign. But when we hire our general contractor, we have them sign a contract. And that contract, of course, lists all the details and the expectations and the payment schedule. But part of that contract is our scope of work. And that's the detailed scope we give him. And once he signs it, of course, we keep the original, but we also provide him a copy in the binder along with a copy of the payment schedule. Because also, for those listening, we never pay a contractor up front, ever, for any reason, ever, ever pay a general contractor up front. But that aside, in that binder is the scope of work. And so for every property, we give that to him so he knows exactly what he expects and what we want done in this property. So like we said, when we do come by and we check and we walk through, and see, okay, what has been done, what has not been done, and if they want to play, ooh, I didn't know, or blah, 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 nope, you signed it, let's go back to page 6, this is what's here.
Makes sense. When I saw it, I was like, it's a no-brainer, it makes perfect sense, but he wanted to ask that question, so I want to make sure he got that question asked. So, this has been episode 57. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire. We're doing great things with the Investment Club. If you guys want to join, email us at info@capitaltodd.com. You can also contact us through the website, which is capitaltodd.com. Just here to share the good news, guys. Here to get great stories of great people doing great things who look just like you, to show you that it's possible for you too. So with that, this is Charles Oglesby. This is episode number 57, signing off.